How do you say your last name again?
Rabidoo.
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 That is so not how Siri says it.
Calling Daryl Rabbit out.
It's like rabbit do? Rabbit do? Yeah.
She's like, it's like she takes all eight letters of your last name and does it wrong.
Yes.
Individually.
Okay, so I have to say, hi, I'm Daryl Rabidoo from Radar Recording Studios and Cancer Conspiracy. And this is my chapter of As the Story Grows. Something like that? That's fine?
Yes. Yeah, you know, something like that. Or we can keep that exact one because you did it fine.
Okay. Yeah, that works for me.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Who got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
I am being realistic.
As the story grows.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
Like I said, I think unless you're born in Vermont and you're used to, you know, French Canadians within a stone's throw, you kind of figure it out. And even then, once you move to Vermont, they kind of bastardize the whole like French pronunciation thing. They start doing those hard endings versus the oohs or the ets, you know.
Welcome back to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. My name's Trav, and as you heard on the show this time, this chapter is going to be Daryl Rabideau of one of my favorite bands ever, The Cancer Conspiracy. I'm going to fanboy all over your face the entire
show. That's fine, you know.
I'm going to give it to you so hard because I don't think a lot of people know about Cancer Conspiracy. And when I first heard it, it dropped my jaw to my lap. I have to give props to my friend Tom Landau, a buddy of mine, who was like, you should stop listening to hair metal and tech stuff, and you should listen to indie rock. And I was like, I do listen to indie rock. I know who Sunny Day Real Estate is. And he was like, no. Follow me. Follow me down this rabbit hole. And he showed me his CD collection, and I was like, I don't know where to start. He's the guy who introduced me to Cancer Conspiracy, and it bent my brain. And I just, on the show just before this one, in speaking to Jackie, our buddy Jackie, I told her that the audio medium is an album that I would run back into the burning house for.
I mean, that rules. That's very, very nice to hear.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. I'm serious. I don't even give a shit who is laughing at me right now. Doesn't matter. I'm going to fanboy all over it. People need to hear the audio medium. It is an amazing album. It still holds its own. And it's just these three dudes from Vermont that just came up with, like, if you're into the whole instrumental math rock thing, I feel like you guys took it to, like, this weird space rock direction.
And yeah, I mean,
and that's why I called you. That's why we're talking.
That rules, man. I definitely appreciate it. I guess it's a little bit of everything, you know. I feel like if you're coming from like the hair metal background, you definitely will dig it, because I was definitely trying to incorporate some Queensryche riffs and, you know.
well
some guitar harmonies.
Slow down. This isn't about me, but my background is so varied. It's super crazy. We were just talking about Motown before we hit the record button, and I kind of got started on like my dad was an older dad, so his rock and roll was 50s and 60s. He just started getting into the whole, like, he started tapping out right around the psychedelic, like Monsters kind of stuff and everything.
Yep.
And 70s rock was like, that's what these kids, the idiot kids, are listening to. So I didn't hit classic rock. My classic rock, Zeppelin and Sabbath and everything, I didn't get into that stuff till I was like 23 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I didn't circle back, you know?
Yep.
So I went from like Motown and that kind of stuff, and I hopscotched over to thrash metal somehow. I don't know. I just kind of landed there. And I bumped up against indie stuff, and I didn't understand what indie meant. I just thought, you know, like, I was into the Christian scene and like smaller labels and smaller bands and that kind of thing, and I got into that kind of stuff, but I didn't know anything at like Big Wheel, Touch and Go. I didn't know any of that stuff until I met Tom in '96, and he and I just got to be really good friends, and I actually moved in with a dude, and he was like, have at it. Like, my CD collection is there. I'm going to work. And if I'm not working that day, I used to sit there for the entire day and just listen to this whole record.
Oh, that's awesome. So you just had, like, access to a giant library.
Yeah. That's like, great. Like, CDs. And, like, like everything. Like, craziness from, like he didn't have any of that popular, cheesy stuff or whatever. It was, like, I think the first thing I grabbed was Toe Nut.
I don't even think I've heard that.
Okay. It was Mouthful of Pennies or something?
Mouthful of Pennies. What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that is.
All right. Well, I'm going to drop that right here.
All right. Yeah.
And there you go. So there's Tonut.
Yeah.
And he got me into some crazy stuff, and I just went down this rabbit hole, and I'm still like 20 some years later, I'm still in that rabbit hole. I'm still finding mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah. I got my mom's records when I was, I think, 9 or 10. You know, she was into music, like Beatles fanatic, loved the Beatles.
Okay.
Which is, you know, it's awesome. I got to grab those records and I recognized them, but there was some other stuff in there that I didn't necessarily know about, like early like Diana Ross and Supremes. Okay. She had Are You Experienced, which was, now it's kind of like, that's pretty crazy, because my mom was not, you know, I think she probably bought it for, you know, Purple Haze or Foxy Lady or whatever, you know,
sure.
the hit. But yeah, I remember throwing on, like, what was it? Self-titled Doors record.
Okay.
And just hearing the end and just, oh. yeah, just being like, this is not, you know, this isn't Light My Fire. Like, this is some heavy, crazy shit.
Yeah.
And,
that's dark. That's about as dark as it got then, man.
Yeah, it was. It was interesting, and the lyrics were kind of, you know, as a kid, it was pretty terrifying, and
yeah,
that was what it was. It was like, I think that was the big one. My mom giving me a record collection, because there was a lot of stuff that I hadn't heard that nobody was listening to, you know, because it was the 80s, and it's right. that stuff had kind of been replaced with, you know, pop.
This is the end. Beautiful friend, this is the end, my only friend, the end.
And then I think the turning point was my babysitter had Shout at the Devil. Just the cover alone sold me. I remember her taking it out. Yeah.
Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil is one of the two records that my mother took from me.
Oh yeah, 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 no. I mean, that was I had to sneak that into the house for sure. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. I was really into Motley Crue when I was younger, because my mom, I must have got my mom's records, I think around like 8 or 10 or something like that. You know, it was like I first started showing interest, and then shortly after that, it was like anything I could get my hands on. And then it was like, you know, I think Headbangers Ball had just started coming out, so it was like,
dude,
Ozzy, yes. and Judas Priest,
yes.
and all the like classics. That was
with the,
pretty
with the prong Beg to Differ.
Yes yep, dude, yep.
Killer.
Well, yeah, it was either that or it was the bass line to Peace Sells, right? I think that one. Yep, that was in there too. Yeah.
Was that Headbangers Ball, or was that MTV News?
Actually, yeah, it might have been MTV News.
Okay, but
yeah,
I
you might be right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, man, totally remember that. And then Prong got shelved, and they brought in Pantera.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think I was starting to get out of metal at that point when Pantera started showing up. Yeah. Cause that was like junior high for me, I think. And like towards the end of junior high, I started kind of not phasing out, but I started, you know, being a little more interested in like death metal and like grindcore. And,
gotcha. How old are you?
I am 39.
39. So, okay. Yeah, so we can kind of place, I'm 41. So we're right around the same.
Yeah. I feel like we're, you know, it's funny because I think we were talking, you know, and just talking about bands when we were, you know, kind of like seeing stuff and like going to show, you know, where you could like go and see a show. Right. And I mean, even you were throwing out like 96. That was kind of when I started getting active and touring and stuff. So it's like a lot of those bands that you were probably seeing was when that was when I was going out and playing with them. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's so cool. So, Daryl, some kid from Vermont who's 39 years old now, was just starting to get into indie, whatever, and everything. You're kind of in the circumference of the whole Hydra head thing.
Yep.
So I
was in a band called Drowning Man for their first full length. And I don't know where that was in like the span of Hydra Head, but it was, you know, we were playing a lot of shows with Piebald, with Converge, Cave In, pretty much. I mean, Beyond Hypothermia, I think, was like, that's when we started playing with them, and it continued into Until Your Heart Stops. I think that was kind of in that span I was playing with Drowning Man. That was exciting times in Boston for sure. And just
What year would that have been?
I think it was like 97, maybe?
Okay. Stop right there. Did you tour with Piebald in Allentown, Pennsylvania?
Drowning Man never really
did. I went to see Piebald, and if I would have seen you already, that would have been amazing. We could have tied the whole room together with that rug, but...
I was in Drowning Man for, I think, 3 years, maybe? Up until, I think, like, 90... I want to say, like, 97 to 99, maybe? So 2 years, I guess?
That's when I went to the Bible.
Yeah, we never had a reliable vehicle, and it was definitely any... I remember we bought a van... And we went and played a hardcore fest. It was like with Boy Sets Fire and Coalesce. It was a huge fest. Cool. And our van, the engine just exploded on the way there. So rather than, you know, suck it up and turn around, we just called a tow truck and had them tow us to the show. And our van, which was non-functional, turned into kind of the green room for the kids that wanted to, you know, have some beers and chill out. So, it was kind of like, you know, the kids that weren't straight edge were welcome to come and hang out with Drowning Man and, you know, whoever.
The kids that weren't straight edge.
Exactly.
There's a straight edge van where you
Yeah, you know, it's
there?
Like, yeah, yeah.
What do you do in the straight edge van?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you probably count your money. You have tons of money, right? When you're straight, like you're not blowing it on drugs. So,
I was never straight edge. I have no idea.
I have no idea. You just sit around and make good decisions, I guess. Maybe that's what it is.
Got it. And then you guys were in the other van, spending what little money you made on the show.
Just blowing money. Yep. Yep. Just dumping it all into a shitty van that wasn't going to get us back home. So. Yeah, we actually had to. We got a U-Haul with like the attachment where you could, you know, tow the van, and they pulled into the driveway in Burlington, Vermont, and then realized that you can't get out if you pull in going forward, and you're just kind of stuck in your driveway with this non-functional van behind you. So they had to. It was a big debacle, I guess, to like actually get the U-Haul backed out and then put the van. Yeah, it was a mess. So, yeah, always have a mechanic.
Did you have a driver, or did you all share?
I think I got a ride back with somebody else, and I think it was like, you know, it was like a three-person U-Haul. So I think it ended up being like, I think we got a rental car and the tow U-Haul truck. The little money that we made off that fest ended up going back into, you know, just getting back home. But we never did any touring. So to answer your question, no, we didn't. I doubt that we played any extensive shows with Piebald, because I think we only would do like one-offs mostly. I don't feel like a lot of people remember seeing Drowning Man when I was in the band. It was I think we were one of those bands that people would kind of like, oh yeah, these guys are cool, but it wasn't, you know, I never have anybody freak out about me being in Drowning Man. They're always like, oh yeah, I remember that band.
And to be honest, that's exactly where I am. Because you and I were talking about when Tom introduced me to like this world that I'm still in, I feel like, I somehow, with all the distros out there and everything, I fell into Very Distribution.
Yep.
V-E-R-Y, Very. And I started ordering, like, man, I specifically remember at my first jobby job, I specifically remember going on my lunch break and ordering like $130 worth of CDs.
Yeah.
And it was everything you just mentioned. Coalesce. Boy Sets Fire. I fell in love with Boy Sets Fire, and I got made fun of all the time because of his voice. Like,
It's, I mean, they were music aside, they were the nicest dudes. Like, I remember, you know, we would end up on these shows with them, and it was, you know, they were just one of those bands that you look forward to being put on a bill with because they're nice dudes, you know?
Yeah. That's, I'm glad to hear that. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just, you know, it's nice when you're excited about, you know, not only seeing a band but seeing the guys in the band when you show up.
Right, right, right.
And just they were definitely
your friends.
Yeah, they were definitely one of them.
So I know with that Very Distribution stuff, I started getting compilation CDs. That's how I found Candiria through Chord magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some CD with 28 bands.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Candiria was on there. And I think Drowning Man was on this Very Distro thing because I just remember it being in alphabetical order. And I remember the first song being shit. I can't remember the name of the band. Obviously began with an A.
Yep.
Whatever. Anyway, then I got into the B's and the C's, and it was Boy Sets Fire and Coalesce. And I remember both of those bands grabbed me by the throat. I still listen to Coalesce. Functioning on Impatience is one of the best EPs I've ever heard.
Yep. Yep.
And Boy Sets Fire, still legitimate. I don't care what anybody says. Again, mm-hmm. Whatever. I don't care. I loved Boy Sets Fire. And Drowning Man was on there. You guys were in the D's. You guys were down there with, you came after Boy Sets Fire, Coalesce, and Converge, so good luck.
Exactly. And there is why no one was blown away.
Would have been Browning Man.
Yeah, exactly. We may have stood a better chance. Yeah.
Might have had a better chance. But shame on you for going so late in the alphabet, the fourth letter.
Seriously. Yeah, we didn't, you know, yeah, it was like any, even shows that we played, it's like early on, it's like, it didn't matter how well you played. If, you know, Cave In and Converge are coming on after you, you're pretty much.
What do you
much,
do? Yeah, how do you compete,
fucked.
Right?
You're fucked, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and yeah. I remember on that, that's also where I first heard Hot Water Music. I still listen to Hot Water Music.
Mm-hmm.
Pitch Shifter was on there, I think.
Jesus, yeah, that's not hardcore at all. That was like leftover industrial stuff, right?
Well, I think
Pitch Shifter
was on it. It was
Pitch.
Man, do I still have those? I don't have those. But I remember getting the Very Distribution catalog and cutting the liner of the CD out of the catalog.
Wow.
To use that as the tray, because otherwise I don't know what song I'm listening to. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, it's legit. So that's where I first heard of Drowning Man. So I guess I probably heard you play guitar for the first time in 96, 7, 8 in there somewhere. Because you were on Drowning Man's Busy Signal with the Suicide.
Busy Island. Signal, yep.
Right. Then what?
I kind of got burned out on the whole hardcore thing.
Sure.
I'd been playing in metal bands when I was in high school, you know, just like with your friends kind of thing. And the drummer from a band that I had started in high school, or not started, I had joined in high school. They were a local band that really, in Burlington, they did pretty well. Like, we actually were doing our, I think it's like a 21-year reunion coming up on January 21st.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. So, Greg.
You don't happen to be bringing that down to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, do you?
No. This is a one and done thing. It's purely a legacy remembrance of 242 Maine.
242.
Yeah.
Right, we'll get to that. We'll circle back to it. But if you guys do want to play Bethlehem, I already have a venue set up.
You got it in? All right. Excellent.
It is my studio and I'm sitting in it and you can sleep here.
All right, that sounds good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Greg from Cancer Conspiracy was the drummer in my high school band Rocket Sled, and he wasn't doing anything at the time. He had been playing in a band called Non Compos Mentis, which is they were just a crazy band. They dressed up in like prison outfits and had masks, and they were pretty nutty. Mark Thompson, that works at Hydra Head, actually put out some of their early stuff on Tortuga. But yeah, Greg had just gotten out of that. He was kind of at the same thing. He was like playing really fast, aggressive, like, you know, grindcore-esque metal stuff. And he and I were both kind of starting to get, you know, a little more adventurous with, you know, what we were listening to and like where we were at as far as our playing ability. So we just started jamming, and it was just he and I. And, you know, I was listening to a lot of King Crimson and just, or, you know, 70s prog stuff.
Yeah.
And I actually started practicing my guitar at that point because I was sort of like just this hack that learned how to play metal, and, you know, that was it. But I actually started taking it seriously and practicing. And Greg, obviously, he's a great drummer. So having a guy like that that can accommodate, you know, odd times and sort of, you know, extended weirdness, it ended up turning into, you know, the early Cancer Conspiracy stuff. And we had, you know, high hopes of moving out to LA or, you know, moving somewhere and getting a singer and a bass player. And then we just settled on getting a bass player and just being this weirdo prog outfit. And yeah, that was where it started. And it kind of just went from there.
Okay. All right.
But I guess, yeah, the band started because we were just kind of looking for something different.
You guys didn't get a vocalist.
Yeah. It would have been a very different band, I think.
I don't know how the hell you would sing over something like audio medium.
I don't know. I remember early on, we actually went down to Inner Ear and recorded with Chad Clark from Smart Went Crazy and Beauty Pill. And while we were down there,
Smart Went Crazy.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the band that I feel like not enough people know about Smart Went Crazy. They were just such big, and it's because you rule, man. That's why.
It's always pretty after an apocalypse. So we stroll past the flowers planted by the Bloods and Crips and make shows white lilies because they're such wacky kids. It was a good day. Damn right. It was a good day. Hypocrites and demagogues were gone, like the sacramental moment in the last poet's song. They unrest and came back just a bitch slap Farrakhan. It was a good day. Damn right, it was a good day.
The exact same dude, Tom Landau, is the guy who to this day he probably still is like Smart Went Crazy is awesome.
Yeah,
he got into so much of this.
I mean, they were definitely, I would say like Smart Went Crazy, Sam Preacop from Seeing Cake, the one solo album he did, and then King Crimson were pretty much all I was listening to and trying to like learn from. Yeah, it was a lot of that. But while we were down at Inner Ear, Chad showed us Farrakhan, and he was like, you guys, if you had a singer and were a little more, you know, if you're a little smarter about your songwriting, you weren't just, you know, jerking off everywhere on your instruments, then you you guys would probably be a dead ringer for this band. And it was like, that's a great, you know, compliment.
Yeah.
So I think that would probably be the closest thing to Cancer Conspiracy with vocals. Yes. And well, at that point they didn't have either of us. Like, Farrakhet was, I think, at like demo stages at that point.
Okay, but now 2017, yeah. The world has Farrakhet.
Yep.
Like, Discord's gonna, you know, they re-release Farrakhet or whatever. Yep. And the world has Cancer Conspiracy. I'm so glad again that Cancer Conspiracy didn't that they get a splinter, vocalist yeah, and try yeah. to sound like Farrakhet.
Yeah.
Because now I have two bands that I love, you know.
I mean, that's awesome. Yeah, we had to get creative not having a singer. That's for sure. I mean, that's where Greg started busting out his saxophone and playing keyboard lines. And, you know,
it's great. I love it.
I bought way too many delay pedals. And that was, you know, just trying to add some try to add something to distract people from the fact that, you know, you're 17 minutes into a song and there's no vocals.
Let's get techie guitar nerdy for a second. I play drums, okay. So you gotta use really small words. But like the delay, like your pedal board must have been like, it must have been. I'm assuming it was 25 feet wide, and you just had.
It was ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, early on, it was. Yeah, it was ridiculous because I was running two amps, so I was splitting my signal. I mean, a lot of like had. You know, pedal boards and technology, I think, you know, that people have now with, like, you know, looping pedals. When I was doing one of the first songs that we had, the only looping option you had was, I think it was like, you know, you could buy a rack mount thing that was, you know, $500 or whatever at the time. Or you use like the DD5, the Boss. It was like, just, it did like a 3 second. You know, loop. So you couldn't really do anything with it, but it was long enough that I could loop one guitar part, which ended up being Summer of Andy, which is like, that was the song on our EP that I think a lot of people kind of got into and we held on to through, you know, the whole Cancer Conspiracy thing. Got but it. Yeah, it was
now what year is this? Like
this
like
was when? It was 90, like 99, 2000, I think.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Because I think Audio Medium was like 2001, I think.
I actually don't know. I have it over
there. Yeah, I mean, it was blurry times. I just turned 21, so, no, you know, there's a lot of fuzziness around those times.
right, because you didn't touch that poison before then, right?
No, definitely no.
Don't lie on my show.
I'm sorry. That's right.
I'm going to go get Audio Medium and Omega.
A few moments later.
Audio Medium. This is on vinyl. I went on eBay and I found this thing. Oh, we're gonna talk about this too. This letter.
We actually cannot talk about that.
Oh.
There's legalities involved.
Can we talk about why we can't talk about this letter? No, he's shaking his head. No, left her. All right, fine.
You do what you. All I will say is certain things with the cancer conspiracy. Anyone that knows us, there was a black cloud that followed that band.
Basically, you guys probably would have been bigger if you didn't name yourselves Cancer Conspiracy. Can we put it that way?
No. It was much bigger than that. It was.
Oh.
I mean, we had all of our equipment stolen in New York City,
right.
And that was one of the things that put the damper on it. But there were other forces involved that I am not allowed to say by name.
You don't have to say my name, but can you go into it at all?
I can't talk about that side of the lyric sheet. Or lyric sheet, I guess the insert.
So, folks...
You can read it. I just can't...
You should go find the Cancer Conspiracy audio medium vinyl. And you should get this piece of paper that I'm holding right now because it's so hot. What I'm holding right now in my hands is so hot that I can't even talk about it on this podcast.
You can talk about it. I just cannot... Yes, you can read that. You can give your interpretation of what it is. You can have an opinion on it. The legalities of my mouth giving you any information aside from what is there. And certain things you could put together from, you know...
reading this entire thing.
Our bad luck. I mean, you can. You can hold... I don't know if you can hold it up. It's, yeah.
My name is Travis John. And from September 1987 through May 1989, I conducted research in the area of enthomusicology at blank university. And when I say blank, for those of you watching on YouTube, you can see this piece of paper. This comes with the audio medium vinyl, and there's a lot of words on here that have been blacked out because I'm not allowed to read them. No one is. During this time, I maintained a close working relationship with Dr. Blank, who, as you already know, published Blank in 1985, accusing medical professionals, research organizations, drug companies, and cancer societies of conspiring to suppress the cure for cancer in the interest of maintaining its multi-billion dollar industry. That's all I'm going to read. Just the fact that you named yourself the Cancer Conspiracy really touches a nerve with me. Lost my dad in 2007 to the same stuff. And I live about an hour north of Philly. And I had to drive my dad down to Fox Chase. Down in Philadelphia, in like the nice, really ritzy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to think the same thing. Like I used to pull into Fox Chase and think, man, if we ever find the cure for this shit, what are they going to do with this building? What are they going to do with this? This is like a college campus. The place mm-hmm. is gorgeous.
Yep.
And pumping $6,000 worth of garbage into my dad's body every time he goes there for treatment pays mm-hmm. for these buildings. What are they going to do if one day they find like an $18 pill that makes this go away? These all have to be converted to condominiums, you know?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
I'm totally down with the conspiracy theory thing, but I'm getting the vibe that you're not allowed to talk about it.
So. I could talk about certain aspects of it. I can talk, you know, there was an article in Playboy on, it was basically a opinion article on kind of what you're talking about.
Okay.
Cancer as an industry, it wouldn't make sense, even if we had a cure, to necessarily get it all out there, because there's a lot of money tied into it.
Sure.
What Cancer Conspiracy, the band, did was we took the idea of cancer as applying it to music, something that will, you know, that could apply to music in a way that, you know, pop and just suppression of I guess creativity, and just the cancer was sort of a complacence, you know, that people just didn't want anything new or different. They just wanted to stick with what they knew, and they wanted, you know, cookie cutter format, rock and roll stuff. And our idea was to just sort of try to expand people and, you know, expose everyone to the fact that there was good music out there. There was something besides, you know, top 40.
Yeah.
And that we, you know, we were the cure for what was going on in music at that time.
I love it.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea, I think we ran with it for a little bit, but it, I guess we bit off a little more than we could chew. And we were a little too vocal about it, and it, you know, obviously now, you know, there's legality surrounding that piece of paper now that
got it.
It, yeah, it worked against us in the end. But
let's get away from this topic, because I don't want you to say anything that's going to get you in trouble.
All right.
But let's just, I love the fact that you said there's a black cloud hanging over this band, and the fact that I'm holding the record in my hand, like they can't take this from me, you know?
Yes.
But,
absolutely.
Yeah, some shitty stuff went down, you know? Broken Hearts, Loft Compilation, and Nightlife recorded at God City with Kurt Ballou and Matt Squire.
Kurt Ballou and Matt Squire, yes, that was
Kurt's... We could base a podcast around that sentence. Holy crap, man.
God. Yeah, I mean, that was Matt Squire's, I think, like, first big record.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I mean, he won't necessarily own up to it at this point, but...
I have it written down right here. It's on a piece of
paper. Well, exactly. Right. And it is comical, because Matt Squire did go on to release some stuff that Cancer Conspiracy would consider a cancer on the musical industry.
Like?
There's definitely some stuff that he's done that was not in line with what Cancer Conspiracy was after, but, you know, we didn't hold it. We didn't make him sign anything when he produced our record. He loved what we were doing, and
got it.
And he did a great job. I know he won't, I don't think it's listed on his releases. So
really,
I don't think, yeah,
you're going to make a statement like that and then not name names. Okay. I see how it is.
I mean, I don't look like a Panic at the Disco kind of guy to you. Do I?
You don't.
So, yeah, there we go. You don't.
Panic at the Disco. Yeesh. So you and Brent got started with this thing. You found yourself a bass player. And, like, in a scene that was, I don't know, I kind of get the vibe from the bigger Boston. I never even thought of Vermont. I forget Vermont's up there, really.
Yeah, no one thinks of Vermont.
Nothing personal.
Aside from, you know, ice cream and fish. Yeah, and Bernie was, you know, that was within the last couple of years. But
yeah, right. But this scene, the horrible curse word that is scene, I feel like, how does a band like Cancer Conspiracy find its way in an ocean of tough guys? You know, was that a thing?
It didn't. It definitely didn't make sense. You know, when Greg and I started the band, it was kind of, the idea was to have something that didn't have constraints and wasn't, you know, we weren't basing it off necessarily anything current. We were just trying to make music that we thought should exist. And it was kind of, you know, it was like a, let's see what happens if we, you know, cross Fugazi and Yes, you know? And our first like bigger show, was on Halloween at 242 Main in Burlington, Vermont. Every Halloween, 242 Main would do, you know, they would have cover bands, and it would be people dressing up and just kind of, you know, having fun with the night. Okay. But then there were headliners. I think Dillinger Escape Plan was supposed to be on that night, but I believe they had to cancel.
Never heard of them.
Never heard. No, they were kind of big. They're from New
Jersey,
somewhere in New England. I don't know where. One of those new places. And One King Down. Have you heard those guys?
Hell yeah! All
right, so One King Down was on. Yeah. So we were playing with One King Down, Drowning Man. We decided we would dress up like priests. So all three of the Cancer Conspiracy guys were in priest costumes, and we got a bunch
with a little white collar.
With the little, yeah, we actually went to a supply store that it was like a Christian supply store where they sold like.
I was just gonna ask.
I would assume they made a ton of money around that time of year because it's like.
Where does a band find priest costumes?
Yeah, I mean, you can totally find a. Where I was going. You can throw a stone and find a sexy nun costume, but you don't find many priest costumes. So yeah, we actually had to go legit and like buy the real thing. So
got it.
Yeah, we got on stage and honestly, we didn't know what was going to happen. You know, our friends, we had a few friends that were like, you guys are really good. Like, I'm excited to see you play out. But we honestly didn't know if anyone would take us seriously or if we were just going to bum kids out, you know. And, you know, there weren't any breakdowns. It wasn't even like half of it wasn't even in 4/4. So it's like it's not even something you can like nod your head to.
It's so beautiful. But
that worked for us because. Okay. It was kind of, I feel like there was this anticipation that we were just going to train wreck the entire time. And the fact that we had practiced so much to not be that band, it ended up being fairly fun to watch. Okay. Especially with Greg as a drummer who, you know, in the middle of a song is reaching over and grabbing a saxophone while playing drums and playing sax lines. So I think that, you know, we caught people's attention and, you know, we didn't have a singer, so it was, we're all, you know, Greg's, Brent's really, really a pretty quiet guy, and I'm not super, I get scared of, like, public address stuff, so there wasn't a lot of talking, there's just these three priests on stage playing this fucking weird music, and I remember getting off the stage and, like, people being really like, it wasn't, you know, when you play a show, your friends will come up and they'll be like, hey man, these guys sounded good. Like that was a good set.
Okay.
It was like, kids were coming up and they were like, what the fuck was that? Like,
I love it.
That's yeah. Awesome. And that was like my friend Joe actually was like, you guys are, you're like a prog rock, you know, Fugazi. And it's like, I'll take it. Like sure. You know, we were getting like Voivod comparisons. It was one of those things where it's like
somebody compared me to Fugazi and Voivod on the same night. I would get the quote tattooed on my tit. Are you kidding?
And it's one of those things where it's not like, you know, people. My friends were having a hard time finding descriptive bands to even compare us to when they were telling people while I'm standing there, you know, someone would come up and they'd be like, did you play yet? And they're like, yeah, they play there. You know, so it was like, okay, this might be worth, you know, putting some effort into. Right. But I mean, every time we walked on stage, we kind of knew that there were going to be some kids that didn't get it, you know, so we definitely got heckled. There were some shows where I just remember people like just halfway through the set, just like having a hard time playing my guitar because I was just laughing because I was just, there were so many people that were not having it and they were just so bummed out. And it was like, yeah, fuck you, man. This song's like 20 minutes. So you're not going to be liking this for a long time. Yep.
Let me school you kids on what prog is all
about. Yeah, it was, I mean, it was, it's, you know, it was pretty pretentious, but at the same time, it's like you have to get, you can't be bothered by, you know, what's going on in the crowd. Yeah, I mean, as long as there's no one like actually assaulting us, you know, right.
You don't want to get hit in the head with a truck skateboard or something, but
yeah, like, I mean, some of
the, like there's I'm air quoting for the YouTube people. Pretentious. And then there's 3-minute pop songs. Like guys, pick a lane. What do you want your scene to be about? Like,
yeah.
This is about breaking genres. It's about pulling down walls. And like, I guess I can see from like a scenester that wears his visor sideways and upside down that One King Down and Cancer Conspiracy doesn't sound like a good bill. Dude, I would have shit my pants. I would have stood in line all day to get that ticket.
Yeah, I mean, I was always a fan of going to see, you know, eclectic bills. I always felt like that was a lot more fun than, you know, seeing five bands that kind of were doing variations on the same song.
Agreed. Right. Everybody's ripping off Sepultura. It's like, I can just
watch one band and do
that, you know?
And I mean, you know, it's like some bands are better at it than others. And sure. I wouldn't discredit any of those bands as being, you know, good at what they did. But when we started Cancer Conspiracy, that was kind of, we were trying to avoid being the band that blended in with the other band on the bill, you know? So when we finally, you know, we played our first Boston show, was with Scissor Fight and Cave-In, and it was downstairs Middle East. And it was the same kind of thing where it was like, Greg knew Mark Thompson from living in Vermont. Mark from Hydrahead, and Mark helped us get on the bill. So we played the show, and it was the same kind of response from Mark where he came up to Greg and was like, I didn't know. I believe said something to the effect of, I knew you guys were going to be like good, but he was like, you guys were awesome. And that was where we started getting a name in Boston. And eventually the kids that were, you know, that were coming out to see Cave-In really latched onto us, and Cave-In definitely helped us a bunch when we started out, just because they were kind of, you know, they were in the same boat. That was the Jupiter era. And they were kind of branching out,
Jupiter is when they kind of took a turn on their fans and people were like, whoa.
Yeah, they started getting real crazy and like spacey, and like that made perfect sense for us to be able to, you know, that buddy up with a band like that.
That sounds right. Cave-In, yeah. Jupiter, and Cancer Conspiracy sounds like a show that I would die at. That sounds
so cool. Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of touring with those guys during that time. It was right around Tides of Tomorrow, I think. The last thing before they went onto the major. Yeah, so we did, you know, we started doing shows with Cave-In. We were getting on these really weird tour packages, cuz there wasn't really a lot of, I guess, like we were listening to a lot of like Tortoise and, you know, a lot of the early Thrill Jockey stuff.
Yeah.
And we weren't able to get on any show because we were kind of too loud. You know, we were kind of in that in between. We were the bridge that, you know, connected the like jazzy sort of indie thing that was going on in Chicago.
Yeah, that makes sense.
With like the loud sort of, you know, discordant rock stuff.
Like Yakuza.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think had we been given the option to go out with like Trans Am, I think it would have made sense. But that, you know, you kind of got to crawl before you walk. So when we started going out, it was a lot of, let's see, we played with, I forget their name, the New Deal. I don't know if you ever saw those guys.
No, I never heard of them.
They played, basically, it was live electronica. It was like three guys playing insane electronic music. like dance music. But they definitely, you know, they would bust into like Pink Floyd covers. They did a lot of, but it was all sort of that like, you know, dance stuff.
Okay.
Really, really talented musicians, but we didn't, you know, coming from an indie background, it was not our demographic necessarily. And they were, I think they were on Maverick, which was like Madonna's label or something.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they put on amazing shows. They were really fun to play with, but it was kind of an oddball, you know, pairing.
Right. Maverick, like
Maverick. Yeah.
Candlebox.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I think Deftones, I think their first album,
Adrenaline? Really? I don't even know. Is that right?
I think Adrenaline was on that. Yeah. But it was, I don't even know if they were like at that point. I think I had heard Adrenaline, but I don't know where they were at as far as like, you know, world status.
Sure. Okay.
But yeah, then we got put on some tours with, we went out with this band called Lake Trout, which they were, I think they started off as like a sort of like a jam band.
Okay.
But then they really started getting out there and doing a lot of like, you know, like Can-esque, just really deeply rhythmic stuff. A lot of like Radiohead-esque elements. Kind of, they were, I mean, phenomenal musicians, and wrote some really, really great songs. They actually hooked up with, who is it, Fridman, that does the Flaming Lips.
Wow.
Does all their records, and they did a couple albums with him. They're phenomenal. And okay. And they're another band that not a ton of people know about, but they were kind of an oddball band like us. So that's when we kind of were like, oh, okay, like these are the bands that make sense for us to tour with. You right. know, they're kind of right. like they're straddling this line. So, I mean, going out with Caven was lots of fun. Right. And right before we broke up, we got offered an Appleseed Cast tour, which is unfortunate because I really would have loved to go out with those guys.
Oh, why didn't you go?
We just it kind of fizzled. The band.
Got
the
it.
Band,
got it. Okay.
The brakes locked up and everything was done. Yep. We'll be right back.
Okay, talking on the mic real clear.
Hi, my name is Ben. I'm Trav's kid. Thanks for listening to the first half of Daryl's story. My dad will post the other half real soon.
Phew, 5 minutes. Attaboy.
Can I hear it?
Yeah, eventually. If you subscribe to the podcast.
Love you. Take care. Bye-bye.